From Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, September 11th, 2012. This weekly podcast brings you the latest information on geospatial technology and all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief, and I'm at the International Map Trade Association Conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico today.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor, and I'm in Somerville, Massachusetts.
So what surprises in the geospatial technology sector might we watch for this fall? Should we expect any surprise announcements by certain companies? Are there any tech innovations we should be looking at? We're going to explore a couple of the things that we think you should be watching. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Esri. Make ArcGIS Online the mapping platform for your organization. Sign up for a free 30-day trial today at esri.com/agoleval.
So, Adina, I picked this topic because certain things kind of hit my radar screen, and I wanted to explore two or three things with you that I think our listeners ought to be watching for this fall, or there may be certain ramifications of things that have already taken place that I think might impact the geospatial technology industry. And I want to start with one that goes specifically to some of the hullabaloo, scandal, whatever you want to call it, with the General Services Administration, where they were cutting back on a lot of government travel. And I think this might impact some of the conferences coming up this fall. Now, some of the scandal broke back in early April when the GSA found out that there was some money being misspent on conferences, some lavish outlays for expenditures that caught the attention of a couple of congressmen, and hence it led to a decision to curtail much government travel, in particular one conference. It was this Gov Energy conference, huge conference in St. Louis, that within 40 days of the event, the GSA just said, sorry, gone, and the conference was canceled. So it got me thinking that what impact could this GSA decision have on events? And I was particularly looking at the GEOINT conference this year. Now, that is not a conference run by the GSA, that some of these other conferences are, but the impact on government travel may be substantial. And I was looking at the agenda, and I know that a couple things have shifted. Looks like there may not be as much in the agenda. Now, I still think it'll be a very good conference, and it looks like the number of the vendors that will exhibit are there. But it may be something to watch for, such that we want to be aware of this kind of trickle-down effect that the GSA may have had on government travel. And it may be also an indication of some bit of health in geospatial technology spending. So this kind of, hey, let's watch our expenditures kind of approach may have a trickle-down effect, certainly on travel, but mainly on other things.
Right, and we actually already saw impact on that. There was a whole track set up as part of the survey summit this year, the ESRI user conference, for the federal survey program. And none of those folks, or none or very few of those folks, could make it because of those cuts. So that was...
What's on your radar so far?
Well, I guess I want to start out on sort of a down note, sadly. I think we've come to a point now in 2012 where that first burst of energy related to the cloud and geospatial is starting to meld with the current situation in the economy with technology. And I think we have to keep our eyes open for, sadly, more removal of cloud services and cloud initiatives, because maybe they were a little early, maybe they weren't fully thought out. So I want to let folks know, if they aren't aware, that Aerial Services, Inc., which was behind the spatial cloud service that we started hearing about in 2010, has decided to sort of rein that public service in and to use it internally. I don't think it's any indication of that service wasn't working. I think that maybe the demand was misdefined or something, but I fear this may be the first of many, and I don't expect there to be huge announcements, hey, we're shutting this down, especially for services that hadn't really taken off yet. But I think we will see them slowly and quietly disappearing.
So on the typical Gartner hype curve, where do you think we sit? Have we peaked on the hype curve of cloud services and geospatial, now coming down to a reality check?
I think we're sort of at the beginning of coming down that hype. I mean, we're still seeing the term a lot, but we're certainly seeing fewer and fewer announcements of new services. I think everybody's wrapping their brains around ESRI's ArcGIS Online implementation that really finally matured at this year's user conference. So I think that's sort of the beginning of that reality check.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think back to some of this initial hype when we were all in this mode of services-oriented architecture. Then it kind of went into cloud services and some of the companies that latched on to cloud. And I'm thinking of Skygon, eSpatial, GIS Cloud, those organizations. We haven't heard a lot from them recently. And I wonder if they're feeling the shakeout. And I wonder if the big guys, again, Esri included, is kind of masking some of the development that we may be hearing from these smaller shops. One of the things I wanted to bring up next on my list is that, well, we've just finished the two major political conventions here in the United States. And my thoughts were going towards election mapping. For the election in 2008, lots of web maps came on the scene. The major media outlets, in particular CNN with the Magic Map and John King, really were providing some excellent interactive mapping, being able to drill down on prior elections. How did the electorate vote one way or the other? And what I'm hearing this year, and I want to see if it transpires, is whether they're going to go deeper into the analysis, because what I'm hearing, and this is just the nature of elections process in the United States, is it could come down to not just a few states or not just a few counties, but a few precincts. I mean, it's getting that sophisticated in terms of pinpointing and target marketing the electorate. You know, I'm not seeing it yet in the media, but what I'm hearing is it could very well mean that the money from political organizations is going to very specifically target down to the precinct level. And I'm wondering if the mainstream media will pick up on that, or whether us in geospatial will be able to provide some analysis that looks at something that specific.
I think that's a really fascinating thing to watch, even as we try to make sense of what's going on with the election. I think one thing that might come to bear on that topic is the amount of interest in the whole idea of the technology behind the visualization of these kinds of data. So we're getting regular updates, if you will, from mainstream media. From The Atlantic in particular is doing a wonderful job looking at mapping and different ways of using data. They have almost an article every day about what's going on with mapping. I think that's terrific, and I think we've got organizations like ProPublica digging into the implications of privacy and legality of use that I think have some real implications too. So the mainstream media and the investigative media, I think, are really ramped up to keep an eye on these things. That may be for the good.
Yeah. Let's see what happens.
As many folks know, I'm very interested in education and geography and GIS education. One of the things I'm looking for, I'm not sure if this is going to happen this fall, but I'm hopeful it will happen very soon, is a real leap forward in the apps and games related to geography and GIS education. Because right now, they're all about where are the states and flashcards and really the old-fashioned capes and bays kind of memorization of where the capitals are and where the countries of the world are. And I think we're ready with the technology to move ahead. So I am looking forward to an announcement of that first game or app, whichever you want to call it, that may have some of those aspects, but also takes full advantage of a tablet and its sensors and your ability to turn and twist it and have it know how you're turning and twisting it to teach you some of these basic ideas of geography that we then use in GIS. Things like the friction of distance, things like simulations, and if we open the mine over here and then we have to transport what we've mined to manufacturing and then to the market, and really dig into some of those principles in an interactive, in a way where young people and, frankly, grown-ups are twisting and turning and getting engaged in working with these ideas. I'm very excited to see that. They already have some games like that for math that have been wildly popular, and I can totally understand why. There's no reason we can't do this for geography and GIS.
Do you think that the evolution of tablet computing, mobile computing, whatever the device is going to be, will allow a more immersive experience for both educators and students? We've been so used to the book learning aspects of geography that maybe we're at a point where teachers will bring students into the field, use the tablets, much like we saw way long ago with some of the early GPS devices where people were going out into the field. Do you think that tablets will be that catalyst to bring a more immersive educational experience?
I do, and I think immersive works two ways. Immersive certainly works. You have the tablet with you wherever you go, wherever you are learning, be that in the field or in the classroom. I'm specifically thinking about engaging in learning in a very active way, very much like the way that people interact with video games, where they're totally immersed and engaged and excited and their hearts are beating and they're just fully in there. I have yet to see that in a traditional geography game of, you know, Point Two, Missouri, right? So I think both of those things could be happening. It's a huge transition to make, but the technology, I think, is there. Now we just need the creativity of those putting together these offerings.
Right. The last thing I want to mention, I'll just only mention it very quickly, are the implications for unmanned aerial systems. And I know there's been a lot of hype about this. Certainly there's a likelihood for them to become more prolific in the U.S. than they are now. They're certainly more prolific in Europe and Australia, where there's not the restrictions on airspace that we have here in the U.S. But the other thing that came to mind of not only the aerial vehicles, but the robotics industry itself, and whether all types of unmanned vehicles, whether they're flying or on the ground, will lead to more interesting applications for mapping, more impact sensor. I'm thinking also of sensor technology. We've got a wonderful little robot roving around on Mars now, which is just a marvel when you think of it, of engineering and ingenuity. And it's those types of things that this caught my imagination and my attention to say, you know what, it's not just aerial vehicles that could be used for mapping. It could be any sorts of robotic technology that could lead to more mapping innovation.
Right, and let's not forget underwater, our swimming vehicles.
Yes, right. Very true.
Okay, so do you have a prediction about what kind of announcement related to that might be coming our way?
Well, if there's an announcement, it probably won't be coming anytime soon, because the only announcement that I'll look for is what the Federal Aviation Administration is going to do with identifying these six pilot cities that are going to set policy for integrating aerial systems into the national airspace. So that's what I'm looking forward to see if that. But again, even when you start naming the systems, they're just test pilot cities. They're not going to be setting policy, probably, I would say, for at least another year. As we know, you know, you can fly radio controlled airplanes right now and stay under the I believe it's a 400-foot ceiling to do mapping. So we'll see.
Right. Well, and do you see in the marketplace, we've already seen Trimble acquire a UAV company, Gatewing. Is anybody else going to jump out and get ready for that opening of the skies coming at some point, we hope?
I think that's it. I think you would likely see some acquisitions in that space. And if it's got to be, in my mind, if you're going to play in the geospatial and mapping space, you want to own some of the platforms. I guess it goes back to some of those early prognostications I had a couple of years ago, is why doesn't a Google or a Microsoft buy one of the the satellite company, the GOI Digital Globe. We've already seen the shakeout in that area. So now with Trimble's acquisition, might we not expect other GIS companies or other companies, could be a defense contractor. Could be a real estate company, yeah. We know that we've got thousands of drones coming home from the war in Afghanistan. Some of those might be retired and used for civilian purposes. So,
and let me add on to that, a lot of the soldiers are coming back who know how to run all those things.
That's a very good point. Yeah,
so there's some potentially good jobs in that space.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, you can anticipate that. And we've already seen an opening up of a private service, a private university, if you will, training UAV pilots.
So. Right. Yeah, so clearly there's some potential down the road. Yeah. I want to stay with that acquisition kind of thinking for my last point, which has to do with where we are in the acquisition space and who might be doing some acquiring. There's been a lot of acquiring going on. We've just mentioned Trimble. Certainly Hexagon has also been acquiring regularly in geospatial. And I guess what I'm waiting for is the big open source acquisition. And what I'm thinking about is, if we have a big company in open source right now, in geo, I keep pointing back to you, it is open geo, and not that they're huge in numbers or huge in valuation at this point, but they have right now a university of open source. They've got all the folks who've been doing this.
Right.
And so I wonder if they are going to acquire or if they are going to be acquired.
Mm-hmm.
I have no particular insight into this. I just see them sort of poised for something to happen. And especially watching ESRI acquire GeoIQ and sort of seeing some of the synergies of openness and open data, are other companies going to see that same thing? Or vice versa, are the folks at OpenGeo going to be in a position where they can cherry pick some existing small consultancies with some great people and great technologies?
The business model for open source and OpenGeo has kind of been at the forefront of this is, okay, there's the software. It's software, just software, as you've often pointed out. It's become a services company. And so to grow the services company model, you either have to acquire other expertise or other products. So, and I'm not sure how that shakes out in the OpenGeo model, but that would be the typical path that they might take.
Right, and you make a really good point, and that's that products are a little bit odd in the open source space because if the source code is in fact open, anybody can build a product.
Right.
But what it really comes down to is the personnel. And it really does come back to this idea that building a consulting firm is very expensive because to increase your capacity, you have to increase the number of employees. And employees are way more expensive than stamping out widgets or boxes of software or software that you download.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting model, but I think the time is becoming more and more ripe for something to happen.
Well, I think those are good observations, and I think we'll leave it there for today. Our sponsor, ESRI, would like to remind you that GIS Tutorial for Health, the fourth edition, shows health professionals and students how to analyze and manage health data using GIS. The book includes exercises that cover health map basics, data preparation for maps, and spatial analysis of health issues. For more information, visit esri.com/esripress. And from us here at Directions, we'd like to remind you that we're pleased to announce our two keynote speakers for our Geo Huntsville conference, Vice Admiral Robert Moret. He's retired now, but he is the former director of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. He'll kick off the conference on November 8th. And on November 9th, we're pleased to welcome Dr. Mike Griffin. He was NASA's chief administrator from 2005 to 2009. These distinguished gentlemen will headline an incredible lineup of guest speakers to discuss geospatial technology and commercial opportunities in space and Earth observation. You can find more information at the Geo Huntsville website at geohuntsville.com. If you'd like to comment about today's podcasts, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com or leave a comment where this podcast is posted on Directions Magazine. Thanks again for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.